Welcome back. You're listening to Horizons on Radio Kerry.
Catherine McCormack, thanks for joining me this morning on Horizons.
You're very welcome. I'm delighted to be here. I'm delighted to be part of your programme.
I know that you're working in Mary Eye with the team doing research at the moment, Catherine. What are you researching?
The Mary Eye project is under the umbrella of a group called Global Researchers Advancing Catholic Education. So it's the GRACE project, G-R-A-C-E.
And lovely name.
Yes. And it's an international group of people who are researching concerns and issues and areas to enhance Catholic education worldwide. So the project we're doing in Ireland currently, there's an advisory board and there's a team of researchers researching Catholic schools at both post-primary and primary level. It's both a quantitative and qualitative piece of research. The quantitative piece has been an online national survey sent out to all schools looking for their attitudes and opinions on the stakeholders as stakeholders of the Catholic school as to what's happening in their school, what do they understand about the Catholic nature of their school, what kind of commitment they have to it, and how they are operating that on a day-to-day basis. So it's really the idea of the head, hands and the heart. And the head would be the information and the content, and the heart would be the passion and the desire, and the hands would be how you implement that in the school. So the qualitative piece then is a follow-through interview with people who are willing to be interviewed afterwards, and that has been completed at second level. So the survey and the interviews are completed at second level, the survey is completed at primary level, and the findings have been found and the data has been analysed, and so the interviews are underway. So by Christmas of this year we should have our findings and some early published findings at that point.
I mean, it's brilliant to do the research and make sure it's quantitative and qualitative to back up your thoughts and your suspicions. But often people know what they're going to find. What are you finding?
People shouldn't know what they're going to find. I suppose the whole idea of research would be that they need the empirical evidence to see what's out there. So I suppose our main intention was to actually see what is happening in schools. What are people thinking? How are they behaving towards it? What do they understand by it? And there are such riches that are going to come out. I can't really give you any findings without having my evidence in front of me. But just to say there are very, very positive elements that are heartening for anybody whose heart is in Catholic education. Very positive at both primary and second level. The gift in second level is the gift of the RE teacher, because the RE teacher is a specialist in that area and has an articulation and an understanding of the whole background. You know, they may have spent 3 or 4 years preparing to be a religious educator at second level. So they're specialists in that area, and they can support the ethos of the school through the liturgical celebrations, all of the events, all of the masses and, you know, feast days and all of that that they celebrate. So they're a huge support to the principal in keeping the identity of the school alive. And they're a huge support to the Board of Management in devising the RE policy for the school and the yearly plan, which they're doing today. At primary level, they don't have a specialist RE teacher, so it's the integrated curriculum. Every teacher that teaches in a Catholic primary school, and there are 89% of our schools Catholic, every teacher is expected to deliver the religious education element of the curriculum. And I think that's very problematic for people who may not espouse that faith themselves. It's a challenge for them. They may be teaching content without witnessing. They may be challenged even to teach the programme because of their own beliefs or non-beliefs or their own direction. So I think that will have to be addressed into the future. You know, where is the specialism in primary school for somebody to deliver this content?
You're putting it so well, Catherine. It makes it really clear for me and the issues that we are all aware of. But you could equally say in schools they don't have a specialism in French, which they're now going to be doing a little bit of. I mean, what's the solution to this, really? Is it divestment of schools, moving away from Catholic primary schools?
Divestment is a current issue, as you know, and parents are entitled to choice. And I would be all for every parent being able to choose the school that they wish to have their child educated in. And I'm not sure if you're aware of the Genesis study that was conducted recently by the CPSMA and the AMCSS, the Catholic bodies that care for the schools. But the findings of the Genesis study, strangely enough, indicate that parents actually want Catholic primary schools. This is why divestment is so difficult. And this came out of the study. And the reason they have for that is, apart from, you know, the level of learning that the child comes out with more resilience, because there's a foundation behind that. And parents want that traditional foundation of faith. They may not want the specifics of Catholic faith, but they want the child to be grounded in something that makes them more resilient. So it was an interesting study. But going back to the choice of parents, parents need to have a choice, and very often they don't have a choice. So the other thing you mentioned was the specialism in French versus religious education.
Or maths or any other. I'm only picking any part of the curriculum I could think of.
Perhaps I'm wrong, but I think there's a difference in being asked to deliver religious education as a non-specialist than there is to teaching maths or French or a subject that is knowledge-based. The RE programme needs to be, you know, you need to be formed in a sense for understanding what that faith is about. It can be taught as a subject among all other religions or as a topic among other religions. But in Catholic schools, there should be a commitment to the investing oneself into this. And that's a very big ask of somebody who hasn't got the training or hasn't got the formation themselves. And it's something that requires detailed investigation in my eyes.
This is fascinating, Catherine, because like I know that it has been criticised in the whole area of the synodality that we haven't done much research and consultation with schools, teachers, and looked carefully at that. And yet we rely so much for the institution of the Catholic Church relies on the primary schools and the secondary schools.
I agree. I mean, the primary school is the foundation of what the children will come into secondary school with. And while the old RE programme used to speak about the three islands of the school, the home and the church, unfortunately, the home and the church may not be as literate in the faith or as invested in the faith as maybe the school is, if the school is a Catholic school. So there's plenty of reason why parents should have choice. We need to investigate how we can bring about that choice, because when it's put to parents and when it's put to boards of management in schools to look towards divestment, we're finding that it's very difficult, because the majority of parents are actually very happy with the school and they don't wish to change patronage. So we just have to look at what other ways are there to give people choice.
Thank you very much, Catherine McCormack. This is Pentecost Sunday. Tom Kenzie certainly knows how to celebrate with music.
Come Holy Spirit, come, and from your celestial home shed a ray of light. Sweet refreshment here below. In our labor restful sweet, grateful coolness in the heat, solace in the midst of woe. Our love faithful who adore and confess you evermore, let your spirit now descend.
Bernard Healy experienced Pope Benedict, who died just in the last day of December, as a great teacher.
Benedict was the man of the quiet word, the scholarly contribution. So that's something which, in a certain sense, doesn't make headlines. You know, he doesn't give sound bites. It's sometimes said of Benedict that he spoke in paragraphs. I saw it myself. I often attended Mass in Rome and I saw Benedict preaching and he'd set aside his script. And what he'd say when he set aside his script was just as clear and was just as precise and was just as thoughtful as what he'd written down on the page before him. And that's a sign of someone who just has this wonderful gift for teaching. The media cycle thrives, unfortunately, on controversy or big gestures and so on and so forth. You know, the media very rarely delivers something to you that you'll take and you'll pick up and you'll read and you'll be thinking about it for a week. And that's the sense in which Benedict, on one level, was not successful maybe in handling the way the media cycle works nowadays. But in terms of delivering something that you can pick up and read and get new things out of every time you look at, that is how he was successful as a communicator.
That is a wonderful, wonderful description of how he worked and how he lived. If you were to say how you remember him best, what would it be, Bernard?
I will say I'll have to remember him best as a teacher, a really kind of talented teacher, a man who was gentle, shy, introverted, a man who, in a certain sense, he followed Christ by going where he did not want to go. And again, you look at his biography, he was a university professor. You know, he didn't want to become Archbishop of Munich, but Paul VI called him to Munich and he accepted that role. He didn't want to come to Rome to serve in the Roman Curia. And yet, when called, he carried out that role. He wanted to retire or step down to a less demanding job in the late 1990s. But again, he was called by John Paul, I need you by my side until the end. And so he carried out that role. And then at the age of 78, at a time, you know, when our own parish priests here in Kerry, they're all retired, he was called by his brother cardinals to become Pope. There's this line in the Gospel where Christ says to St. Peter, when you grow old, people will put a belt around you and will take you where you do not want to go. The thing about Benedict's service was it was always following a call to go somewhere. It wasn't a call that came from himself. It was always a call that came from outside. And he challenged the church to know the faith and present the faith in such a way that it made sense to the modern world. He had this vision where, you know, he said that even if the church becomes very small, it wasn't that he wanted the church to be small. He was looking at the reality of the church in Germany. He was looking at the reality of the church in France, the church in Italy and so on. He saw that if the church was going to be carrying out her mission to the world, she needed to be a creative minority. And because of that, you know, she needed to know what she held very well. And yet at the same time, knew the world around her well enough that the church could put into words precisely what it is that all of humanity hopes for, desires, and can ultimately only find in God.
Thank you very much, Father Bernard Healy. After the break, we look at Isaiah's story of the lion and the lamb.